This is Mayor Rick Kreisman inviting you to stay tuned to the St. Pete City Hall broadcast from RadioSt.Pete.com. The City Hall broadcast is a podcast designed to give you an informal look inside your city government. Here is your host, Will Koontz.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the City Hall broadcast. My name is Will Koontz, host of this here program. Supposed to be heard twice a month, but the guys have been busy, busy, busy. So this is our first one in a month. We're going to shake the rust off.
We owe the listeners a good show.
Definitely. I think we're going to make that happen today. We have Sharon Wright. She's the sustainability manager. We're going to get really involved with Sharon here in a minute. But that's it. You've been waiting for the look, you can see the smile on Kevin's face right now. You got to put it up there and make sure they can hear it.
Yeah, they heard that.
You think so?
Yeah.
All right. What was it? How do you have that on your phone?
That was NKOTB.
Did you download that from iTunes?
No.
You didn't?
Kevin has everything on his phone.
No. I did not have New Kids on the Block on my phone.
Wow.
So those that have forgotten.
Things not on my phone.
Kevin King is here, as well as Ben Kirby, my co-hosts of this show.
Yep.
And you guys have been very busy. I haven't talked to you guys very much.
June was just a really, really busy month.
Incredibly busy.
We're breaking ground on stuff every few days, it seems, or every day. I think we did two today, actually, or two last week by the time this airs.
What were that? I know we had the pier today.
Pier groundbreaking, and then the Tom James Museum of Wildlife and Western Art, or Western and Wildlife Art.
Western and Wildlife Art. They did what's called a topping off ceremony. They take a beam and everybody signs it, and Crane carries it up to the top of the museum, sets it up there. It's pretty cool.
Is that like the cornerstone kind
of?
Yeah, a little bit. Is that open now, or is it?
No. It's going to be finished the end of this year. Probably be open to the public next year, early next year.
And it's a wildlife museum? What kind of things
can
people
expect? It's like a Western and wildlife art museum. A lot of stuff from, you can imagine, from sort of like Native American peoples and, you know, the kind of art you might see out in like New Mexico and Arizona and that kind of thing.
Cool.
Mr. James of Raymond James fame has been collecting it for a lot of years. And as you can imagine, he has a sizable collection.
Doesn't he have a huge art collection in general?
Like, yeah.
They're opening another museum here just on his stuff, right?
That's what this is.
That's this museum.
It's actually called the Tom and Mary James Museum.
You can't forget about Mary.
Yeah. Tom and his wife, Mary, Mrs. James.
No, I see.
So, yeah.
I thought it was a modern art thing, but no.
No.
It's,
okay. This is Western and wildlife.
This is your Western wildlife genre. Yeah.
I see.
But there's that other museum that's opening up, which is the American...
That's the craft one.
The American Craft Movement Museum, and I may have gotten that wrong.
You definitely got it wrong. It's very
the museum, right. The Museum of Art and Crafts Movement.
Stop by your head, would you? Yes. Well, it sounds very interesting, though. I can't wait to check out this museum. I heard a lot of good things about it. And then the pier groundbreaking today, that's a huge deal. Yeah. That's been a long time coming, and a lot of people thought they would never see the day, but today was the day. Yeah. I know Joe was out there, talked with you a little bit today.
Talked to Joe Bordeaux of Radio St. Pete fame and other fame. The mayor said, good things come to those who wait, and we've waited a long, long time to break ground on the pier and to get a pier, and we'll start seeing a pier come to be probably late next year, early 19. We'll have a pier.
I know they have the episode from today, him being out there, is live on podcast at cityhallbroadcast.net if you want to check that out.
They're putting that on, the pier one on City Hall Broadcast?
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah. You got election coming up here in August.
We can't get into that a whole lot. We can't do the politics at City Hall.
Okay.
The election, but there is an election. We record this right next to the clerk's office, and they've been super busy getting prepared for our city elections and helping the candidates through the process and qualifying paperwork. And got a lot of folks who have thrown their hat in for different offices, council and mayor, and democracy is alive in St. Pete.
I had heard Mayor Rick called in to Drew Garabo Live the other day.
He did. Was Ben?
He did.
I think
yeah.
Ben was there for that.
He called in to Drew. I wanted to talk to him a little bit about Pride, which was another big thing that happened this month. Pride Parade and the Pride Festival So we talked to Drew a little bit about that. He talked a little bit about the pier groundbreaking coming up. Always good to chit-chat with our buddy Drew. We love Drew.
You know, they had just played my segment. I had Seth on my show.
Really?
And they got done trashing me. And then had the mayor come up.
So you basically fronted the mayor. You were basically the lead. Yes. You're basically the warm up act for the mayor.
Correct. Yeah, that, it was quite the honor.
Our guest just reminded us too that we had this groundbreaking of the Financial Empowerment Center at Campbell Park recently, and we'll see. We like to say recently because the show airs next week. So
It's
just veteran. If you're a veteran radio person like Ben and I and Will, you know this.
Here, get
not,
close to that thing.
Yeah.
There you go.
So,
yeah. You can move it too if you want. Don't be afraid. Kind of move it around.
That was the second thing at Campbell Park in like a week. We've done a lot of Campbell Park in the last.
Did the skate park recently?
Whoa!
Regional skate park.
Can you rollerblade there too?
You can do whatever you want there.
You know, rollerblades are coming back. Sharon, did you rollerblade when you were younger?
I rollerblade now.
You
so same.
That was the best answer she could have given.
My dad said he's going to get a pair. I'm really excited to see him.
I was sad to see the Pride rules where we weren't allowed to single inline skate.
Really?
Darn.
You're not allowed to do that in parade?
Really?
In the parade? Well, I guess, yeah, if you fall or something.
They discouraged inline skates and pets because of the crowds.
Sure, sure. Probably, yeah, it's a busy event. It's one of the biggest Pride events in the country, right?
In the Southeast, for sure.
Yeah.
That's right.
So today we're going to be talking renewable energy sustainability with Sharon Wright. Sharon, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about your role with the city. I know you were telling me a little bit, and it sounds like you're a very busy lady.
Yes, I am. Honored to be the in the role of sustainability manager at the Office of Sustainability out of the mayor's office. Mm-hmm. It is the first one, and it was established officially late 2015. Through an executive order by Mayor Kreisman, and my job is very exciting. I get to work on lots of things. So out of this office, we work across departments. So, for example, we have many great projects going on. You just heard about a few, the pier. We have a police headquarters. We have the skate park. We have a new police training center, a new fire station, airport redevelopment. All of those, get to work with those teams on how to build them more sustainably. Also, just working on the internal culture here at the city. What do we need to do more and more of to actually walk the talk of sustainability? Community outreach and the many amazing, awesome community groups that we have in town that work on various aspects of sustainability, including renewable energy, including zero waste and those sorts of things. It's because of a lot of those people and the mayor that I even have this job, so that's very cool. And just really trying to try different initiatives and things that are either really new here or maybe even new across the country to forward the idea of sustainability, and especially as it relates to renewable energy, where we're a little behind here in Florida on.
What's your background? What makes you qualified to fill this role?
How dare you?
Song and dance woman. So it's like, you know.
Sure. No, my background, I have a soil and water science degree, an undergraduate degree, and then I have a master's in planning, and I got that at Georgia Tech.
What do you think of that, Will?
And
remember when Will regretted asking that question about her qualifications? You didn't do that to Wayne Atherholt.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, actually, you did.
Okay.
Do that for everybody.
All right.
Before I came to the city, I worked in the private sector at an engineering firm for about 14 years and in different places. I was in Seattle for 10 years. I got to work in Alaska a couple of years. I've walked where people do mining and fracking and actually seen that kind of stuff as well. And in a firm like that that's national, you get to work for, I worked in the water department as a planner. I worked as a planner doing community plans and comprehensive plans. I worked with the solid waste group to do green building for transfer stations and how to do recycling programs better. So it was, I think that helped me come to a place in the city from the planning department to work across those kinds of departments here for St. Pete.
Yeah, I know we have, you mentioned the pier and the police station as two huge projects for the city. What kind of green technologies are going to be going into those?
Well, at the pier, you know, I think the approach from the beginning and what we heard from the community was really, in itself, it's more of a sustainable project maybe than we've done before as sort of a park setting, more of a green setting. There's that more natural landscape, more shade. The building itself at the end of the pier, we're going to be doing a green certification for. And for the pier district itself, because, you know, there are these green certifications for buildings out there like LEED and Green Globes, which we're using. There are also now green certifications for infrastructure projects, right? Because the pier is a piece of infrastructure over water. It's not a building where you do office stuff. So for the whole pier district, we're going to certify that using something called Envision, put together by a national organization for infrastructure. Sustainable infrastructure, that is. And so we're going to be looking at that holistically for materials used, landscape, stormwater treatment, which we're looking to do well beyond what code requires for low-impact sort of green infrastructure development. And right now it is being designed with solar PV, solar photovoltaics in mind. We are finalizing partners and funding on those, but the plan is to have that as well. So this is just a few of the things. There's a lot.
When you say solar, does that mean like literal like solar panels?
That's right. Right. So one area we're looking at is one of the parking lots. We may do if we find the funding and the design and the partners, and we're working that out. But it would be we'd have shade over some of our parking spots by using solar PV. Stick a couple charging stations in there for electric cars, and you have a really sustainable feature there. And then on the pier approach, where the land is before you get to the overwater part, you know, we're going to have that really neat market structure, which in itself is sustainable, right? It's kind of an entrepreneurial sort of incubator type thing for small businesses, and economics is part of sustainability too. But back to the solar piece, we're looking at doing that with solar shade instead of maybe a normal market sort of kiosk type shade. So that could be pretty neat if we get that into the final construction budget.
I'm fascinated by solar power, and I think it's a no-brainer with somewhere like where we live here in the Sunshine City.
Sure.
I think a lot of people are weary of the technology yet, that maybe it's not ready quite yet. But you have a lot of people pumping money into it. Elon Musk is pumping a lot of money into it with his Powerwall, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like, I think I even saw, I may be mistaken, but even roof shingles.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That look like roof shingles, but they're solar panels now.
That's right. And some of them, it's saying that they might be coming out a little less expensive, too, in the materials right now. And the first ones that are being more market ready, it looked like, would be around next year sometime. So we watch those things, you know, you see the publicity, and then we'll see. But people should not be afraid of the technology. It's been around for a long time, and now it seems to exponentially be getting better. One of the bigger projects, maybe even in the region now, are we allowed to name company names that are in
sure.
the city?
Sure. There are no rules on this show.
Okay. Great yeah. Bay Distributors has a wonderful...
Whoa, except for...
Oh, no!
Except for Great Bay.
That's Great Bay.
Darn it.
Third rail there.
They've been an awesome community partner in what they build out there in many ways, but solar being one of them, they've taken many groups on tours and things like that.
Yeah.
And they even said by the time they had it designed and ready to go and purchased, the technology had gotten better, but they're still getting a payback better than expected. When they originally set out. So the technology's been there, and it's getting better, and the payback is getting better, too.
I think at this point, too, isn't it even the storage capabilities of batteries are kind of the limitation now? I mean, the panels are ready. Mm-hmm. It's just the actual storage of the energy.
Yes, that's right. And that is coming along. As a matter of fact, we are, well, as you may or may not know, Tesla partnered over at USF St. Pete on that parking garage, and that they have a battery storage unit there, and that's sort of a research, it's sort of an R&D piece there, so we're very involved in that. In addition, we recently partnered with the USF Clean Energy Research Center, just something we wanted to build a relationship because they're doing patents on all kinds of technologies, including solar, so we just want to stay in a relationship and help their students as they help us with ideas over there. So we do need that, and we were kind of looking at some ideas on some projects for R&D on that if we can get some partners involved.
So one of the things, and by the way, this is one of those topics we could do like 10 shows on.
I mean, yeah,
the definitely. Amount of stuff that Sharon is focused on would take up a lot of time to cover with any decency. But one of the things she does every day is focus on these sort of acute issues in the city. Short term, we have projects that are happening, but we also have this longer term vision for the city. And the mayor has a vision, and he just got back from the U.S. Conference of Mayors, where while he was there, he joined with the other mayors, and actually they joined with him. He was one of the first
yes.
in Florida to do this, if not the first, joined the Sierra Club's campaign for 100% clean energy, which is to power the entire city someday by clean, renewable energy. So all the mayors got together. They passed a resolution this past weekend on this, and Sharon's also a part of that. We have a as part of that, we have residents now as part of a co-op that are have bulk buying power, who are putting solar panels on their homes. So we're addressing not only these government facilities like the police station or the pier, but we're also trying to work with the community to go green as well.
What's the city doing to incentivize these types of energies?
Well, a couple things. One, there are strategies that cities use throughout Florida and really in the United States on kind of a, I'd call PACE a loan program, basically, that we're exploring, where it makes it easier for folks to go green and pay over time. But the big thing I think we did recently was probably the League of Women Voters Co-op.
Right. So we were the first in Florida to sign on to the National Ready for 100 campaign.
Right.
That drew the attention that's bringing in some of the partners we just discussed and the other communities. And then, again, now this step with the Conference of Mayors, which is just awesome. With the Solar Co-op, the League of Women Voters does this in a few places around the country, but they set it up. They set up a solar co-op, the first full one in Florida here in the city of St. Pete. And co-op can mean different things. It can be used in exchange for other terms, but here co-op means within a certain amount of time, so many residents can sign up. And what that does is, and then those residents help with the League of Women Voters and some technical assistance from Community Power Network, they help select a contractor or two to install those. And what that happens is when so many people sign up, it builds the confidence in the contractor to say, okay, I'll give you a discount on installation because I know I'm going to have this many projects. And in our first co-op, they had about 240 people sign up and over 50 have been installed so far. And so we encourage that through our vision, and it made people comfortable to do here. That was really the only incentive. We're currently looking at something with the mayor and city council to where we may offer a little bit of our BP settlement funds to further that and seed some more efforts. And we are looking at ways to seed things that will be self-sustaining to have reach into the community and more than just city projects on facilities.
Does that have anything to do? I know we had that amendment, the solar amendment, that had so much controversy, I guess, because it was so worded weird. You didn't know if you were voting for it or against it, and then you had people trying to trick you into voting a certain way. Do you know anything about that? Like, what happened with that? I know it passed, right?
Yes on one, right?
Yes. I can't remember. It was no in November and yes in August, and I can't remember
which. Right? We had the solar, and then we had the marijuana, too. And Jimmy Buffett came down and said, vote for solar, vote for marijuana.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we're good with that.
Yes.
And
yeah.
What did that do? Do you know? That's more of a state issue, I guess.
It was a statewide issue. God, I'd have to go back and...
Well,
wasn't that like a renewable portfolio standard, basically?
I thought it
allowed. No. We don't have a renewable portfolio standard in Florida, which is not good for Florida. But the amendment allowed, I actually can't remember how to word it for a radio show either.
But it was Amendment 4?
Amendment 1 and Amendment 4, yeah.
So that didn't really do anything for the city, though, as far as the plans that we have here.
It did, and then it stopped. The energy companies wanted to further, like it's already in the state constitution in some way, but they wanted to further codify to vote. If the vote would have gone the other way, it would have made it more difficult for residents and to grow renewable energy because of issues with connecting to the grid and issues with rates. There is some strange business model information out there, and it's a little bit tough to understand. But right now, it could look like the more renewable energy you promote, the more other people who don't have solar energy on their homes, their rates are increasing. And we really are trying to work with the energy companies to not have that be the message or the case. We want to set this up so that there are no winners and losers, just winners. And a lot of times across the country, it gets set up the other way. And We're trying to work to do that.
I found it here. I think the marijuana amendment made us forget about the solar amendment.
It made you forget.
So 73% of Florida voters said yes to Amendment 4 during the August 30th primary election ballot.
And that's the one we wanted, yeah.
And we were good with that. And demonstrating broad support for a win-win policy that will expand energy choices by reducing the economic barriers of installing renewable energy. Authorize the Florida legislature to amend the Constitution to provide property tax relief for businesses and residential property owners that install solar energy devices on their properties, like rooftop. So that's kind of the gist of that.
Okay, well, good. That sounds like a good thing.
Yeah, we like that.
What other renewable energies is the city looking into?
The city already has geothermal energy at the North Shore Pool Complex. And that is used, I believe, to heat the pool water there.
Cool. That's digging down literally into the earth and pulling heat from the core.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. I know.
Will's into that geothermal.
And I think those are the two main things I know of within city operations and facilities. I just moved back here a few years ago from the Northwest, and I assumed, because I didn't see any wind, that we didn't have a lot of wind here. But then I heard about all the high winds at the end of the pier. But if you look at, there's sort of a national map of good places for wind and bad, and around this edge of the Gulf Coast is not the most ideal. But I think in this conversation, I'd like to include, there's small wind turbines you can put on a home or a small, you know, building. It might be worth kind of a little R&D effort. Demonstration.
The current
tidal. I don't know why there isn't tidal energy here. I haven't delved into what research has been done there, but there isn't any that I know of currently.
Okay. So what other things are? I know you mentioned something about community gardens when we were talking a little off air.
Oh yeah, I mean, just the things I got to work on this week. We do have some community gardens around town. We have the Edible Peace Patch and some of the work they do with schools and gardens. The city right now is looking for a way to ask people, whether it's nonprofits or other groups, to propose to the city how they might operate a community garden at the near the Enoch Davis Recreation Center in the south side. We know it's a bit of a food desert out there, and there's several efforts by the city to make that better, and this is one of them. And it's been pretty cool to go through the what are the challenges and what kind of models would we want. And, you know, there's not a lot of urban ag experts within the city, so we've been reaching out to the community for that. That was very cool. I think a lot of people know that we also allocated some funding last year for trees. We haven't been keeping up after the recession with tree plantings. So rather than just buy and plant and leave, what we've done is take a little bit of tree planting money and started sort of an urban forestry foundation for that. And we've gotten through some of that with the community and with a certified arborist. So we're going to be going to city council to say, can we have the rest of that funding so we can go buy some trees and get them in the ground?
Yeah, actually on trees, I think I think sometimes we talk on this show about things that don't get enough attention in sort of the, in the media, basically. Green space and trees. We talked about the green space on this program. We've added acres and acres of, dozens of acres of green space, and now we're adding a lot of trees, and I think that's a pretty cool legacy to leave behind for any staff person or politician. To green your city and to hand that off to the future, because you really can't have enough of green space or trees, especially in this urban environment we live in that's built out. It's kind of a cool thing to have.
Yeah, it's one piece of a larger puzzle. I'm very excited to be working with engineering and water resources. We're doing a lot of wastewater planning and stormwater planning and overall, you know, water conservation, and our parks are very protected, and we want that. We love that our parks, we don't want a ton of big pipes and utilities in them, but as a city moves toward more green solutions or green infrastructure, as you call it, you want to think about linking parks to waterways and lining those with trees, and where are we getting the best value for those sorts of things. So we're thinking about those throughout all of our programs.
What about for people, like, I know my friends have chickens, and, you know, they're growing their own food now in their front yard. How does the city feel about that? Where does the city stand? Because I know some don't like it. You can't do it. You can't have chickens. You can't grow your own food even. I've heard people getting...
Well, we have food co-ops throughout the city. I'm not sure how regulated it is or if some of them are off the grid.
Mm-hmm.
But backyard chickens are legal.
That's right.
can have.
You are allowed to have chickens in the city. I don't know the. You have to. You know. You can talk with planning and codes, and they'll get you through what the requirements are, and what you need to have. But no, we allow chickens. We allow gardens, and
you remember,
the city's very supportive of all of that.
You remember we had on Claude Tinkersley? Do you remember Claude? He was a public works guy. He had the bow tie.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. Kind of had a good look.
He had a really good look. Solid look, really.
Handsome guy.
He had the chickens in his backyard. He lives in Bradenton. And he had chickens, and then he got rid of the chickens, finally. They were causing a mess. I think people get chickens, and then they become a headache.
Yeah. Yeah, they can be a pain. Yeah. They're noisy, too.
Yeah.
No, you just have to get the right amount and have the right kind of housing, and they're gorgeous and they're fun, and you're, you know, generally not allowed to have roosters because that's where the noise comes in, and sometimes you don't know it's a rooster. You go out to a rural area and buy them, and when they're small, I believe you can't tell if they're male or female yet, and so when you get them into the city and you realize you have a rooster, they usually are allowed to take it back.
I like the idea of having fresh eggs.
Yes.
It really seems exciting. I actually went one time. I was up early enough to go to the Saturday morning market, and I went and I bought these eggs. And I brought them home, and it said not for human consumption. There was a sticker on it. I'm like, oh, man. So I threw them away, and then I remember I emailed the lady, and she was like, oh, no, we have to put that on there. But you could totally eat those.
You get beautiful colors, and when they're fresh like that, you don't have to refrigerate them as long as you don't wash them off or whatever. They're made to kind of sit in your basket and look gorgeous until they get ready to be eaten.
What about the fact that Will didn't, when he wakes up early enough to go to a Saturday morning market that ends at 2 p.m.?
He woke up early enough to go to the mid-afternoon Saturday morning market.
I was up at 8:30 on Saturday. I'm getting old. I don't know what they say.
We don't even know you anymore.
I know. They say 30 is just a number. When that number hit, weird things started to happen. I started having one drink and going to bed on a Friday night.
Coleslaw.
Eating coleslaw. What kind of freak show eats coleslaw as a side dish?
There's a line in a Jimmy Buffett song that says, "These days I wake up about the time I used to go to bed."
Yeah. It's insane.
That's kind of what happens.
Yeah, that happens. But you know, I don't want to go to the Saturday morning market by myself.
You can always call us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I don't even have you guys' numbers.
Yeah.
You just have to go through the email. Weren't we supposed to grab drinks one time, and then that never happened either.
No, we definitely have to do that.
There's usually somebody there that needs a dance partner there on the stage.
That's what I'm afraid of. I don't want to be that person.
Did she have the right stuff or what?
Absolutely. It was very, very interesting. Yeah, we got to wrap. Do you have any of your special segments this week?
Not really. No, I have nothing. But I did have that New Kids on the Block song.
You did? Bringing something to the table definitely.
Yeah, but I do want to say, just to close up on Sharon, we talked about a lot as much as we could in a few minutes, but the mayor, Mayor Christman, is trying to prepare our city for a changing climate. And this is a priority. It's not some far off thing or nebulous kind of. This is reality, and we're seeing it. We're addressing it. We're physically lifting homes in the city with FEMA grants. We've seen, there was a story recently that showed the tide gauge in the city just in the last 20-30 years has shown increased sea level, and we're in a vulnerable area, one of the most vulnerable in the country. This is something else that's on Sharon's plate, is saving humanity.
This
little job of protecting 260,000 people from sea level rise.
Yep. Yes, our tide gauge out by Albert Whitted has been there since about 1946, I think. So we have very reliable data. It's not a matter of if and all of that. There is observed sea level rise, and that is just sea level rise on its own, not counting when we have these extreme events and winds that raise things up through the lakes and everything across the city. So we are addressing that. We're going to be kicking off pretty soon an integrated sustainability action plan, and there's going to be a lot of community involvement in that, so I really am excited about working with there's no one that won't touch in the community. It's a broad plan. It's the city's first one, and it will address climate change and mitigating that, and that's part of that renewable energy where we slow our contribution to why it happens. And then we're also going to be looking at resiliency, like the stuff we talked about along the coast and FEMA floodplain stuff, as well as vulnerable populations that need to bounce back when we have an event. And we're also going to have a whole breadth of objectives and policies we're going to look at with the community outside of those with some overlap, just to prioritize what are our sustainability priorities, what are we doing well, and we're going to demonstrate that through a program called Star Communities, and then we're going to use that to say where do we want to be and where do we want to spend money and people time to get to the next level.
And this sea level rise is dangerous for our sewer system, which has been obviously in the news and beleaguered system, but there are now pipes that did not used to get a whole bunch of, is it infiltration?
Infiltration.
That are underground pipes that now are getting water in the pipes into our sewer system during high tides. And so this is a huge problem for our sewer system, stormwater master planning.
Mm-hmm.
It's real, and and we're doing something about it, and it's not a crazy thing. It's happening in St. Pete. Sea level is rising.
So where do you think, like 10 years, where do you see the city as
under,
far as
completely underwater is what.
Completely, I don't know. I was going to buy a house. I guess I should wait on
it. It's going to be cheap now, Kevin. Where will the city be in 10 years? I think that in taking on what we've discussed today and even more, a lot of it at the same time, it's going to put us to the level of other progressive cities that you look to, like Seattle and Austin, for the different areas where they do really well in sustainability. We're in that conversation. We're on that national stage with them now, and we're going to be the place that people look to. We're taking some risks and trying some new initiatives, some of these financing options for things like that haven't exactly been done, and we want to set the example for that, and hopefully we'll be, our ISAP may tell us, but if we want to be 100% clean energy in the next 20, 30 something years, then in 10 years we better be in a measurable direction on that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Very good. Sharon, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate you. Let me remind everybody that Creative Loafing Best of the Bay voting is up. We could. Here's where I lobby for our podcast to be chosen as Best of the Bay.
This podcast or your podcast?
Either one. That's fine.
So vote for the City Hall broadcast.
Yep.
Or the Homemade broadcast.
Homemade broadcast, hmbradio.com.
We would love if people gave the City Hall broadcast a nomination or a victory.
No, we want a victory.
We want to win.
We're not doing
the three of us
going to
be
nominated. Honor to be nominated.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well,
that would be amazing to win an award.
Yeah, it'd be
really
cool,
would.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd make me feel accomplished.
I hear they have a pretty good party, too.
Yeah.
And if there was only a category for best podcast you've never listened to or never heard.
Well, if you guys, you know, maybe said, hey, we do this podcast on your Facebook and the social media.
We always push us to push it harder.
All right. We'll see. Well, thank
vote.
You guys.
Vote in Best of the Bay. Yeah. Vote for look up Homemade Broadcast on the Twitter.
HMBradio.com. You can find my guest this week will be Lisa Unger. She's a New York Times best-selling author. Just came out with a new book. So
she's wonderful.
She'll be good.
Yeah.
I think she does karate and stuff, too. So
she's great.
Cool to talk
Taekwondo.
Taekwondo. Okay. Same thing. You don't know either.
No, I never heard of her.
Wow.
Yeah, so check out hmbradio.com, radiostpete.com, and I'm starting a company called homemadepodcasts.com where you can reach clients through advertising. So if you ever want to do a podcast for your business, hit me up, homemadepodcasts.com. Guys, we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Thanks for listening to Radio St. Pete's City Hall Broadcast, an informal look inside your city government. This is Mayor Rick Kreisman inviting you to join us next time for the City Hall.